It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sheree and Peter.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys. I'm, of course, Sheree, one of your aforementioned CPG Guys hosts. I'm with a special guest today, and my co-host, Peter Bond, couldn't make it. But before we get to the guest and we start into our usual dialogue, let me remind our audience, we are 200 episodes deep. No kidding, 200. Some days when I wake up, it's hard to imagine that we've done this over 200 episodes and nearing 2 years.
There you go.
And so we thank you for the love. We thank you for all the followers on LinkedIn, people who DM us directly, people who send us LinkedIn messages. Y'all shape the show. Y'all tell us who comes, what topics to discuss. The best way to do it, go to ratethispodcast.com/CPGguys. Leave us a rating, a review. The rating tells us whether we're doing the right thing. The review tells us what we should be doing. It's that easy. We have started a sister podcast, East of the Atlantic. Our friends Efrain and Daniel talk to guests there in Europe, Western Europe, about all things what they call FMCG, fast-moving consumer goods. They're called the FMCG Guys. Do check them out. We're also in partnership with the Network of Executive Women, now rebranded to Next Up And one of our best friends, Sarah Alter, is the CEO and president of Next Up. Every Wednesday's episode, there's hidden an Easter egg, which tells you about what's going on with Next Up, the upcoming seminars, the events. To tune in, download, listen. And now I'll move to our special guest. This guest is no stranger to the CPG guys. Has been on the CPG guys. I think you're nearing 10 episodes.
This is number 10. I keep saying I want my jacket. So and my cameo from Candace Bergen.
There you go. And you know what? We need to find a way to get you a jacket.
Will
hockey jersey work? Because Peter's Canadian and that's what he's into these days. Would that work?
Sure.
With the long arm.
The CPG guy's ice hockey CPG jersey? Yeah, for 10 times, yes.
You gotta
do something different.
I don't look like a guy who knows anything about ice hockey, but we have ice hockey.
You're in LA now. The Kings are a big deal out there.
There you go. In one of the warmest places in the country. Let me introduce my guest first.
Oh, sorry. Hi, guys.
A friend of mine over the years in the CPG industry, what I would call somebody who's mentored me through the CPG industry and taught me a lot. One of our iconic gurus in the CPG industry that I guarantee all of you have heard speak a keynote at some point. If you haven't heard in the CPG industry, well, guess what you're missing out on? And that's what we're about to decompose today. So let me welcome the SVP of Commerce at Omnicom Commerce Group, Mr. Brian Gildenberg himself.
I'm just happy to be decomposing with you, Sherry. That's it.
There we go. But before we start this episode, Brian, can you take a second to tell us what your role is at Omnicom?
Sure.
And then for the benefit of our audience, if they want to find you, track you down, do they do that on LinkedIn? And is there a website you can refer to them to for Omnicom?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I work for the Brian. I work for the Omnicom Commerce Group, which are the agencies at Omnicom dedicated to helping brands come to life in the commerce world. So you'll find if you've never heard of the Omnicom Commerce Group, fear not. We are better known by the agencies we trade under, which are Haygarth, the Integer Group, TPN, and Tracy Locke. And I work closely with those agencies in a variety of ways, mostly around helping figure out what the world of commerce looks like now, but really more importantly, what it's going to look like next. And how we as the Commerce Group and how we more broadly as Omnicom help our clients navigate what is becoming an increasingly integrated world between commerce and advertising, commerce and media, retail, physical retail and digital retail, and just bringing all that together. And I work with the agencies to help them do that.
And Brian, that's exactly what we're going to talk about in this episode, but with the 2020 opinion of yours.
Oh, sure.
So Tracy Locke brings back memories from my Pepsi days.
Oh, sure thing.
They had the agency for brand Pepsi forever. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they still have it, but
yes.
I remember back in the days, like all the iconic stuff, Michael Jackson, all of that stuff came out of Tracy Locke
indeed.
At the end of the day.
Yes, you would love the latest campaign that we've just run for, because we've done some really cool work with them around urban, so particularly on the Pepsi Detroit stuff that Tracy Locke did for Pepsi is really
awesome.
Good. So.
But what an iconic brand. That's what comes to mind when
indeed.
I think about Pepsi, my former alma mater. So I'm going to jump right in, Brian. And let's kick it up. And of course, he has a Pepsi in his hand.
Right.
Not by accident. So let's kick it off. And my first question to you, Brian, is the most simplest one.
Yes.
But one that's pretty profound.
Okay.
And that is the word retail media.
Sure. It's two words.
My belief, and we've learned today that Sri doesn't manage his words well. So my belief, Brian, is retail media is here to stay.
Yeah.
And is retail media a capability issue for CPG companies? Is retail media, as in part of the marketing mix, or is retail media just another merchandising tactic?
Well, and I wasn't just picking on you for no reason to say it was two words, so that was a big part of it. It is two words, and I think both words are important. And I think this is the challenge that, in the end, the opportunity and the challenge presents for any CPG company, which is that the people responsible for working with retailers and the people responsible for planning, buying, and optimizing media don't really talk to each other as a matter of course and haven't historically. Brand marketers and salespeople interact pretty regularly, and the stories about how those two groups interact and or not successfully is legendary. You've been in sales forever, right? So sales and marketing, blah blah blah. And sales in the media part of marketing, though, it's not that they have a lot of tension; they've just never really intersected with one another, and as a result, just don't understand each other that well. So I do think that you've got an interesting issue today because the answer can't just be one or the other because there's an enormous media component to retail media in terms of understanding the strategies associated with media, the language associated with it, the goals and objectives that are more common in media. Things like reach. Like if you ask the average salesperson what reach is, they're going to think it's a competitive toothbrush brand, right? So it's just not.
Or they're going to reach for something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really high up. If you ask a media person about like inventory issues, they're going to think about advertising inventory.
Sure. Yeah.
You ask a retail person about inventory issues, they're going to think about supply chain, like physical supply chain.
Yeah.
So bringing that together is an enormous amount of effort. And then I think the other piece is that I do think that the challenge with retail media in particular is twofold. One, you've got, from a media point of view, the retail ecosystems themselves are, and this is not a knock on all the great work that the retailers are doing to try to improve this, but they are not today media platforms that are easily usable day in, day out by people that are used to DV360 or Google or the Trade Desk or, you know, those types of media platforms. And at the same time...
But has that improved over the years?
Yes, it has. Yeah, and I think you've seen all of the major retailers are all getting better at this, as well as the work that folks like Criteo are trying to do and Citrus Ads and all the people that work with the retailers that don't necessarily have their own capabilities. So yes, that is getting better. But at the same time, you also can't just run media in a retail environment, because that media thing is usually such a small part of the overall brand's relationship with that retailer. And, you know, the example I was thinking of the other day, and this is partially because at Omnicom, we just signed a deal to be able to programmatically buy stuff like some of the in-store media, so like cooler screens at Walgreens. So we've got a deal now with the demands, the supply side DSP, to be able to programmatically buy some of that. And the first thought I had was like, okay, so you get a media buyer programmatically buying screens in a Walgreens store without the Walgreens team leader for the brand knowing what's happening.
What a chaos, though.
It's interesting. And the capability to do that from a media point of view is fascinating, but you got to have a way to make sure that everybody understands that there are multiple objectives in that ecosystem.
Absolutely.
And they all need to be managed.
I gotta imagine, Brian, the reason someone would buy media in store and cooler is to actually push product on the shelf into a cart, into a POS.
Well, yeah, and this is why retail media more broadly is one of the reasons why it's becoming such a big issue now, is that you've got, with the eventual degradation of cookies, though Google seems to be kicking that can down the road a little bit in terms of being able to identify.
But it's going
to
eventually, this is,
yeah.
It was a problem last year.
Yeah.
Noise died because of changes Google and Facebook made to adapt.
But it's
a lifetime problem.
Well, yeah, and the stuff that Apple's done with IDPA, which is probably even a bigger issue. You've got a real need for first-party data, and that's what the retail media ecosystems promise.
Absolutely.
But the best use of that is conversion within that retailer's own ecosystem. And in order to do that, there's somebody within a CPG company who's a vice president or higher who's usually responsible for conversion in that retail ecosystem. And that person has to have some understanding of the activity that's going on to drive that conversion. But then that person also has to learn some of the language of media in order for them to be able to understand what their media people are doing. So this is just an enormous amount of, so I would say that it is here to stay, because it is a valuable source of first party data for brands, and because the retailers will find, you know, the retailers can use the revenue stream. And it is both a media platform, but it's basically an organizational capability.
So,
can your media people think retail, and can your retail people understand media?
When you say capability, though, what triggers in my head is retail media a shopper marketing activity, or does it belong in the marketing mix under a brand?
Well, I think the answer kind of has to be a little bit of both, right? Because you need...
But here's what I find. The reason I ask you that question, Brian, is the dollars are usually coming from the marketing mix, the medium budgets. But the execution, because it's being happening on a retailer, is being done by a shopper marketing team. So you've got this little bit of
Yeah.
My money, your money, your action, my action.
Sure, yeah. Well, and you've got a whole bunch of different things kicking in there, because I think you've got interest in wanting to control the budget, and then yeah. You've also got because I think it's a back and forth right now too, because I think a lot of companies are, and again, it'll also depend on the retailer too. And I think when you think about retail media, I think you've got to tier it a little bit, right?
So sure.
Amazon's its own thing, right? And that's a different ecosystem.
But even for that, I found Amazon's retail media usually is always done by the Amazon sales team. They've got somebody on that team who's actually getting it done. I rarely see like a shopper marketer for Amazon sitting somewhere else.
Well, no, because the competencies of a shopper marketing group are often rooted in the customers that you've sold to historically and rooted to some degree.
Grocery.
And in brick and mortar too. I mean, like that's where a lot of those competencies live. They have learned digital, but the Amazon team kind of grew up in its own thing. The difference, I think, for a lot of brands, and you know better than me in some cases, but a lot of brands
I don't know if I know better than you, but let's get that out of the way.
But just at a practical level, because because Amazon as a media platform is a little bit more, has just had more history as a media player, media buyers tend to understand Amazon a little bit better. And because it's purely digital, which is something they get and is a little bit more natural to a media buyer, it seems to work better. So you've got Amazon in one tier, then you've got the tier, not beneath that, because I don't want to make anybody mad, but
there's another tier
of the legacy brick and mortar operations, yep. Walmart, and the three big ones from a media point of view are clearly Walmart, Kroger, and Target, right? So we're Roundup. So those three have built out a suite of capabilities that are beginning to look in different ways from each other, more like conventional media platforms. And that's the trick to being able to access consistently money that would historically be measured and allocated by the marketing mix model. Because if you're going to do that, you've got to be able to serve up back to the marketing mix model data that it can use. And that right now is where a lot historically...
Isn't that a non-starter from retail?
It's a...
Or is it like very light right to these days?
You
get something.
Yeah, it's just not what the media teams are used to. And just in my observation, I think that the media groups, because they buy stuff, right? They're used to people giving them what they want. I mean, they're a buyer, basically, right? Yeah. So as a buyer, you tend to be displeased when you don't get back exactly what it was that you're looking for. And as a result, you don't adapt necessarily as much as you might. So I think there's a gap today between what media folks expect, what they're getting back from the retail platforms, though that is getting better, and a lack of appreciation of some of the unique value of a retail media site, which is the ability to get something close to conversion.
For sure.
The one case, and here's the case study where I can validate this in my own head, because the one retail media that everybody in the world wants to pay for is search.
I'm guessing, Brian, that's directly related to search is directly proportional to basket checkout. And your ROAS is automatically going to be high.
Well, yeah, because it's, I mean,
doesn't make it right, though.
Well, no, but what it does do is it reveals that there's nothing inherent about retail media that's problematic. It's just that when it works really well, like search often does, everybody's like, fine, I get this. I'll pay for that forever.
I just want to stay in that world because the... Explaining ROAS is easy.
Well, yeah, because it's really high, and it's because you're putting an ad up literally right when somebody's trying to buy something.
Catch them in the lower funnel.
I've said this a million times in the last 2 years. It's more like an end cap than it is like digital marketing.
And thank you for using that word, because that's what I believe in.
It works more like an end cap.
So search is no different than end cap.
It is,
and it's believe. Would you agree that a banner display on the homepage is lobby display all day long?
Yeah, I don't even know. I read somewhere, my old friend Nigel Hollis from Kantar wrote something hysterical, which is that
brings back memories.
Statistically speaking, you have a better chance of completing Navy SEAL training than you do of clicking on a banner ad. I'm not sure if it's true, but it was a great line. And
I won't debate that because I find banner ads on a homepage disruptive.
I
personally, that's me. consumer.
I think we are going to learn that just because something can be, you can measure the placement of something, doesn't make it valuable. And I think that's, you know, it's that great old phrase that says it is critical to measure what is important. It is foolish to make important what can be measured. And I think banner ads are often an example of that second sentence.
What about the big player in the room these days that all food and bev has learned over the last 2 years they need to partner with, and their retail media engine, Instacart?
Yeah, I mean, I think Instacart is, again, you know, you've seen Instacart pivot a bunch of different ways in the last couple of months around trying to figure out exactly what their role is going to be in the ecosystem going forward. And the funny thing is with Instacart is that there's really no good model to draw from for them. Because there really is no other market in the world in which this type of third party has inserted itself this way.
It's like a pickup from the shelf.
At this scale inside the grocery ecosystem.
I didn't know that. So there's no comparative ecosystem of fame anywhere in the world.
No, there's nobody that systematically embraces the retailer's assortment as comprehensively as Instacart does, represents that to the shopper almost as though it were the retailer's own site, except it's better. In terms of the ease of the experience, and allows the shopper to buy that, have it delivered to their home for a fee that Instacart collects. That's a model that's pretty unique to Instacart. But what about them? I think their capabilities also improving, and they're trying to figure out, you know, exactly what their role is going to be given the quirky nature of the relationship they have with the individual retailers or other systems, right? Because
they're tied to the actual retail shelf at the end of the day. Without that, there is no business to be had.
Exactly, yeah. And, I mean, that's the business model. And then the question is, you know, Instacart can and does aggregate the data from a multitude of retailers. And then the trick is right now is that this is just an observation. It's kind of a tweener data set, right? Like it's bigger than the individual retailer so that like the Albertsons team can't use it as easily as they could use data specific to Albertsons.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not national enough that a media buyer can easily use it to do the things they would do with a national media campaign. So what you end up with is an audience that's not as segmentable as you would like it to be, not as big as you'd like it to be, and not as focused as you'd like it to be. So I think right now some of the innovations that they're making are to some degree because the asset itself as a media asset is kind of stuck in an interesting place. So
I wonder where that's going to hit, Brian, but I have a slightly different question for you.
Sure.
In your current role, working in a media company, media agency called mm-hmm. What You May, you're exposed to hundreds of brands. You work with several across many categories, mm-hmm. not just food and bev.
Right.
I won't put you on the spot and ask you for which brand understands retail media, but is there is there a category or two where you feel brands have started figuring this out versus going down the brand route? Like, is food and bev taking this seriously enough? Has apparel figured it out? Is it toys and electronics? Is it something else completely? Is it more? I found that beauty.
Yeah, that would be the one.
Beauty and skincare.
Yeah.
Really understood 10 years ago that digital is real for them and that browsing had shifted almost 70-80% of occasions.
Mm-hmm.
I think CVS and Walgreens, maybe Sephora and Ulta, but even Sephora and Ulta, I think the shoppers first tend to go to the app because the app is so good.
Yes.
CVS and Walgreens, they still go into the store. Because they're combining it usually with another shopping trip of some sort, the pharmacy.
It's a pretty different demographic. I mean, if you just look at it, basically.
But is there any category? Is it beauty and skincare?
I would say of the, because I think electronics takes it on an interesting path, just because Amazon is so big for those guys that I think if you're talking about Amazon competency, you're going to look at the categories that have been mostly influenced by Amazon. I think in apparel, it's interesting because most of the really great digital brands and apparel have a very strong D2C presence like Nike.
Absolutely.
So it's a little different. The whole dynamics is very different.
I don't even buy my Nike from anywhere but Nike.com. You can see it. My Air Max is on custom ones. I only shop on Nike.com.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that I do that. So I think apparel is very different just because the ecosystem's different and the retailers that you can sell through that aren't Amazon are different. But yes, I think within the consumer packaged goods world, I do think beauty's moved more quickly to embrace some of these ideas, just because I think the purchase consideration for a lot of those products lends itself a little bit better to investing time and energy into thinking about how the shopper gets to where they get to, if that makes sense.
So if I think commercial, right, mm-hmm. for any CPG brand, commercial is usually marketing, finance, sales finance, some piece of supply chain, yeah. sales, retail media, who needs to get complete knowledge within all those functions, or is it all of them? Who needs to know it like inside out and the others can follow?
I would say that I think complete knowledge is going to be, I think it's difficult to ask a supply chain person to get complete knowledge of retail media. It's just not their Fair. Thing, right? I think I might flip the question the other way around, which is that I think a media professional, in order to be able to manage retail media well, needs to be conversant in how a joint business plan with a retailer is built. They need Absolutely. To understand how that works, what the goals are, why everybody cares so much about category growth when you talk to the customer teams, Absolutely. And why your brand switching campaign doesn't really interest anybody. Like, these are really basic things that you need to understand if you're a media planner trying to operate in that ecosystem, right? You know, in the same way that you wouldn't put on an ad on NBC advertising a program on CBS, you
don't make no sense.
Yeah. Like, you don't put an ad up that just swaps brand purchase from one brand to another, particularly a brand that makes more marginal.
Although
than yours.
Many a times on Fox News, I've seen CNN ads, and on CNN, I've seen Fox News ads.
Well, there you go. Well, we're all very confused. It's all coming together. It's harmony. But I would say that within that, I think it's always good for anybody that's exploring an unusual part of your business to understand how your finance team evaluates success. I think you just need to know that. And you also, and this goes back to, teaching the club channel 25 years ago.
I remember.
Yeah, just make a friend in finance. You need somebody inside the finance group.
I mean, you talk a club, but I think about Amazon 10 years ago. That's all you had to do. Your best buddy had to be someone in finance.
Absolutely.
To crack that P&L. To actually be able to do retail media on Amazon,
Amazon is a psychedelic Costco. So it's
item merchant is what I would call it.
Yeah, they're item merchants. They make most of their money on a membership. they sell items. They basically run a subscription business model. The margin on selling is not the motivator for them, and they use their advantage by being able to get to a lower selling margin to create price differentiation in the market. Yeah, they solve most of their problems by upsizing. They're very similar. You need that friend. You need that friend. Somebody within the finance team that can help you decode what your company's obstacles are to understanding how you're generating wins, why those wins aren't registering on the scoreboard the way that you would hope. And then in the other area, that a media person, and you've got providers out there now, like mostly like Crisp and Hyphen and folks like that, that are starting to do a really good job of being able to link together media deployment and supply chain. So, and that's all got a really good, interesting economic rationale, which is that you don't want to advertise or you don't have a product. So, the ability to see that's become, media people understand why that's important. And as a result, media teams are starting to get more fluent in the physical supply chain than they used to, because they can see the data and they can use a little bit better. And some of the smarter ones are starting to ask questions about why the physical supply chain doesn't work the way they thought it did.
Listening to you, Brian, my big takeaway is this retail media world is still evolving clearly.
Oh, God, yeah.
And has years to go.
Yeah.
But it's 2022. It's April. What's your big advice to brands? Like, what should they do? How seriously do they need to take it? Who needs to pay attention? Is it now? Is it a year from now? Do they need to start carving budgets for it, not just on Amazon, but multi-platforms? What's your big advice?
I would say that I think it is unrealistic to expect the customer teams to manage this without structural support and without some budget help. I just don't think the larger retailers have already been pretty clear about that.
But that structural support you speak to, is it shopper marketing?
I think the media teams, and this is now the most self-serving thing I'll ever say, given the agencies I work with, but I think it's true. I think the media teams need an infusion of shopper thinking so that they understand how product conversion works, right? Like what the, and not just A-B testing your way to success through digital, but really understanding how the purchase, how shoppers think about conversion, what their decisions are like when they convert or when they don't. I think that's really important. I think the shopper marketing needs to be infused into functions where it hasn't historically lived.
So in your mind, shopper marketing historically where it hasn't lived, where should it sit?
Well, I don't know where it should. And my answer to this has always been, I don't think there's one answer to where it should.
Is there a stronger opinion versus an exact science on this? Like, hey, inside the media team versus no sales team because you're close to the retail and customer.
I think it really depends a lot on the company you've got and where you are now, and the problem you're trying to solve. So, I think by and large, today, most shopper marketing teams need to be led by a group that understands retail. So I think putting shopper marketing into media, at least to me, feels a little ahead of where it just feels a little ahead of where the world is.
But probably 3 years ahead, this will catch up.
I think 3 years from now, you're going to be looking at the programmatic and digital nature through which a lot of assets in a retailer's ecosystem are bought will require more media expertise. I think you're going to see that function just get rebranded as something that isn't media. I mean, maybe it's retail marketing, maybe it's conversion marketing, you know, some phrase that isn't lower funnel that means lower funnel, but somebody's responsible for understanding how that works and how the pieces of that interconnect. So, but I think companies can spend, and I know that a job like yours, you got to figure out who runs what and who, where, what budgets pay for what, and that's important. I think companies can spend a lot of time worrying about where stuff sits. It's way better to think about how the work needs to flow, because you can solve that problem without a massive organizational restructure. Organizational restructures, generally speaking, don't bring out the best in your employees. It's scary, it's threatening, we've all had 2.5 years of uncertainty. Saying we're going to restructure gets everybody defensive. It's like, well, we're going to restructure. Saying we're going to reorganize the work to make it flow better, now everyone leans in. And once the work's rebuilt, the structure will kind of become apparent. You know, it's like they asked Michelangelo, I carved the David, and he just goes, I looked at the marble and figured out what didn't belong there. And, that's
what a great statement, though.
And that's it is awesome. And that, I think, is a lot of how work design should work. Look at the marble and just figure out what doesn't belong. And then what you're left with is the structure.
So, Brian, on the CPG guys, the last question is always the same.
Yes.
And that is looking future forward.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get your predictions for retail media.
I think there's going to be...
Do we see more retailers get into it? And is it warranted that everybody has a retail media network?
I think two or three things. Yeah, I think the...
Because everybody has audience on their webpage.
Well, I think there's a few ideas that are going to be important. Number one, I think the notion of retail media as one thing needs to decouple a little bit, because you've got two main components of it. You've got, for lack of a better term, activations that are on platform, but you've also got audiences. And I think that what you're going to find is that the ability to reach a retailer's audience is a different competency than understanding how you activate in their ecosystem. Those are two. And I think people will start to understand that better and delineate that better. I think secondly, it would be weird if every retailer that really isn't Walmart, Target, and Kroger went out and formed their own retail media network and didn't figure out that those networks are probably more valuable aggregated than they are as separate, disparate entities. And this is where businesses like Quotient and Criteo have tried to function for years, which is to act as aggregators for that to bring some scale to it. Whether it is those businesses or someone else, I think someone will find a way.
Would you advise brands to run this race by themselves or to partner with some of those services providers?
I think partnership is a massive theme at the moment. I think everybody's realizing that they're not going to bring their own answer. And that partnership can look like a couple of different things. I mean, you can, like, if you're a brand and you feel like you've got great first party data for something, it's way easier today to build technical solutions like clean rooms, that the fun buzzword that'll be the buzzword of 2020.
I hear about the word clean room all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I joke about this sometimes, but it's basically like, with apologies to anybody who listens to this that's Amish, because I don't think they are, because they wouldn't be listening to a phone, but it's like an Amish prom, right? So a clean room, you've got all the boys on one side, the girls on the other, they get together, they dance, and they go back to their walls at the end.
I don't know about that one, Brian, the only clean room I know is when my wife hands me a bottle of Clorox and a broom and says, clean the room.
The best analogy for a clean room is like an airlock in a space movie. Like, you kind of connect the two things, and then they detach, and that... the data only comes together to do the thing it does, and then it goes back home.
We did do an episode about 6 or 8 weeks ago where we did discuss clean rooms.
Yeah, and I think partnership, whether it's short-term job-specific partnerships like clean rooms or longer-term partnerships. But I think what everybody's realizing is that, you know, and you saw this even this week with IRI and Profitero partnering together for, you know, linking together Profitero's view of e-commerce with IRI's view of e-commerce purchase data. So that I think you're seeing more and more single entities realizing that they don't have all the answers. And connectivity is going to be, has always been the skill that really matters in the digital world, the ability to connect things. And I think for a while, everybody got so concerned with building their own assets that you forget that the real magic of this is the ability to connect it all. So I think connection is going to be a big one. But the specific prediction is I do think that over the next 24 months, the smaller retailers, somebody's going to figure out a way to aggregate those where you need to turn that into a really interesting media asset. So,
you know, I'll look forward to that, Brian, to see if there's a true aggregation that comes through to it for it to become a real media asset.
Yeah.
Let me thank our audience for listening to this episode of the CPG Guys.
Mm-hmm.
We're fortunate today that we had my friend as well as one of our industry gurus here who's been imparting knowledge and wisdom to the industry for how many years?
I've been working in this industry for 25 years. I don't know what percentage of that I've been imparting anything that resembles wisdom.
I would claim 2.5 decades you have been. So thank you, Brian, for joining me on this special episode.
No, thanks as always, Sri. It's always a pleasure. Last time I did it with Peter, not you. So this time I've got you and not Peter. So.
I had to pay back Peter for that. So sincerely, thank you. And I'm hoping very soon we can move our conversation into a different topic. You know, today I wanted to hit up retail media.
Right.
It's a hot topic. But I'm starting to hear more and more this notion, Brian, that category management is going to be less relevant in not 5 years out, but 24 months out. And that we're going to see more and more item merchandising driven by bots across retailers. Not going to put you on the spot and ask you questions on that. I want to save it for our next episode.
I got a lot of ideas about that. Because
I think that's a nice discussion and debate, you, me, and Peter.
I don't think those two issues are I don't see those two issues in opposition. I think you can both say that category management will be more automated and that category management will remain critically important. I think both of those are true.
I think I basically very softly have promised that you're coming back to the show to have that discussion with
there
us.
There we go. Why not?
So do we have your word?
It's a teaser. Yeah, sure. I mean, there come on. Go. Now even I want to hear what I have to say. No, I don't.
There we go. Thank you, folks. As always, thank you for the love you've shown the CPG guys. You know, our close to 12K followers on LinkedIn, all the stuff that goes on in Instagram. Every guest that comes here, we're thankful for what you come and say over here. Because at the end of the day, the mission has remained the same. Imparting knowledge, sharing everything I've been fortunate enough, Peter has been fortunate enough to learn in the CPG and retail industry. Do leave us a rating and a review. That's the only way we get to know whether you enjoy the show. ratethispodcast.com/CPGguys. Do check out our sister podcast in Europe, FMCG Guys, with Daniel and Efrain. They talk to FMCG professionals in Western Europe, and the conversations remain the same. Omnichannel, digital, the changing world of retail. With that, it's a wrap. We will catch you on another episode of the CPG Guys soon, and Brian will be back. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks. Thanks, Sri.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.